the more I practice and explore the mysteries of the mind and experience, the more mysterious this quality of mindfulness seems. In some ways, I think this is pointed to by what Gil was talking about, that as we really begin to explore this practice, we see there are things that we do that support the conditions for mindfulness to arise, but we don't actually do mindfulness. It's more of a state of being. We can give some words to what we think of as mindfulness, kind of conventionally, such as being present or awareness, witnessing experience, observing experience, knowing what's happening while it's happening. Another language I particularly like in terms of a practice pointing is the language being with experience. Creates more of a sense of connectedness, intimacy that Gil was pointing to, the intimacy that we have when we are, when mindfulness becomes established. Intimacy with this human experience. I think that mindfulness is related to a very ordinary capacity of our minds, a natural human capacity of our minds, functioning, a natural human functioning of our minds. This ability that we have as human beings to know that we know that we know, to be aware that we are aware. A kind of a self-reflexive capacity of our minds. In some ways, it's one of the things that makes us human, this self-reflexive capacity of our minds. And so it's an ordinary experience, it's an ordinary quality of our minds, a human quality of our minds. And also I think this points back to what I said last night about the refuge in Buddha, being the refuge in our capacity as that we have as human beings to wake up. And partly I think this capacity we have points back to these just natural functionings of our mind, with this possibility of being aware, of being aware. One of those functions. And the Buddha looked at this functioning of mind, and in my understanding, he recognized the incredible value and potency of this capacity. But not just its potency in the abstract or in our ordinary way of exploring knowing that we know. My teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, sometimes says, you know, if you just go up to somebody on the street who's angry and ask them, do you know that you're angry? They'll probably say yes. They might look at you like you're kind of nuts. And yet, the way that they know that they're angry is not necessarily in terms of this recognition of, oh, this is the human experience of anger, but more perhaps in the sense of, I know that I'm angry, and what do I need to do about this? How can I get back at this person, or prove that I'm right, or do something, take some action, take that anger personally, and figure out something to do to get rid of it, fix it, change it, figure out how to change somebody else so that they won't be making us angry as we think about it. This is how we think about often. At least certainly was the way I thought about my experience before I met the practice. I had the sense of being this hapless creature that was kind of pushed around by the world and had no real understanding of how my own mind contributed to all of what I was experiencing. And so this perspective, the perspective of mindfulness that the Buddha pointed to as being powerful and profound, it's not an ordinary perspective. There's a very particular way that he encourages us to be aware of our experience. And this is described in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Establishments of Mindfulness, sometimes the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, it's called. I'd like to stop and explore this term, Satipatthana, for just a moment before I go further with this exploration of mindfulness itself, or the establishment of mindfulness. The sutta describes, the title of the sutta is the Satipatthana Sutta, which can be translated in a couple of ways. Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as the foundations of mindfulness, which, and Gil pointed to these areas. There are four areas in this Satipatthana Sutta, the foundation or the area of body, of feeling, of mind states, and of dhammas, as he described last night, these four areas. And the term or the exploration foundation to me brings a sense that these are areas or different areas of experience that we should be mindful of or that we should pay attention to. So a very directed kind of approach. That it's, these are things, these are the what of our experience. This is what we should be paying attention to. Perhaps with that perspective, and this is the perspective of the commentaries largely, that it describes what we should be paying attention to. And with this, it may create the sense that there's certain things that we pay attention to and other things that we might not pay attention to. But that's not, in my understanding, the Buddha is encouraging us to be mindful of all of our experience. And Thanissaro Bhikkhu points to this with a different translation of this term, Satipatthana, and he calls it the four frames of reference, which basically is an exploration of ways to look at experience, that we are looking at all of our experience, but kind of through different perspectives, or just turn and look at it from this side, or turn and look at it from this side. And so all of our experience is included, and yet from time to time we might shift and look from one side or another at these various areas of experience. And then Anālayo translates it as establishments, or ways of establishing mindfulness. And this one feels particularly resonant for me. I like this translation. And to me, what this points to is that these different aspects, body, feelings, mind states, and dhammas, experiences, relationships of how things are put together, as Gil talked about last night, that we explore observing experience in these areas in order to establish mindfulness. And how, to me, this points not so much to what we, or the importance in this translation to me is not so much about what we pay attention to, but how we establish mindfulness. It's less important what we're paying attention to, and more important how we are in our relationship to experience. And I think the sutta can be looked at from different perspectives. And today I'll explore one key phrase of this text from this perspective of how do we establish this quality of mindfulness. As I said, the Buddha pointed to a particular perspective, not our usual perspective of how do I get rid of this or fix this or change this, but more a sense of what is this human experience? What is this experience that's arising in this moment? So there's a key phrase early in the Satipatthana Sutta that gives a flavor of the qualities of mind that support this establishment of mindfulness. And the phrase is repeated for each of these four foundations. I'll read it for the body. One abides contemplating the body as a body, diligent, fully aware, mindful, free from desires and discontent for the world. And likewise, one abides contemplating feelings as feelings, diligent, fully aware, and mindful, free from desires and discontent for the world. So this phrase is repeated four times, once for each of these four areas, four foundations, four aspects, four ways of establishing mindfulness. So I'm going to pull this phrase apart. We'll look at it a word at a time, or a couple of words at a time. So one abides contemplating. Abides contemplating. And we'll abide contemplating something. But abides, this word abides, it's translating the Pali word that basically means to dwell, to live in. So abides feels like a good translation to me. It's resonant with what the Pali evokes, I think. And what does the word abide evoke in you as you let that word land for yourself? If you are abiding, to me it often evokes a place of rest, a place of being at home, a place potentially of security or safety, of refuge. Perhaps including some exploration of receptivity when we're abiding. To me, a quality of abiding is more of a settling back, a resting back, allowing things to come rather than being active and looking at things. And so it's got this quality of settling back, of resting back. We abide contemplating something. Contemplating has some other qualities to it. Contemplating has some more active qualities to it than abide does. The word contemplating is said to point to looking at, observing closely, looking at repeatedly to see. And so it brings a more active quality to it than abide. And so this points to a kind of a dynamic between resting and a resting quality of mind and an active quality of mind. So contemplating usually is associated with something that we contemplate. We don't just contemplate in the abstract. We contemplate something. And each of these foundations is meant to be contemplated. And so we abide, rest, receive, exploring the body as a body. That's an odd phrase, perhaps. Contemplating the body as a body, looking at the body as a body. This phrase, there's different ways it can be understood. One of the ways that I resonate with it for myself is we look at the body is what we explore, and so this term contemplating to me points to both what we explore and how we explore it. And so the body is what we explore, and how we explore it is as a body. As a body, not as my body, but more from an impersonal perspective. We abide, contemplating, observing, recognizing the body as a human experience. Bodily experience, the impersonal nature of this body. This is not our usual perspective with which to observe the body. And likewise, observe feelings as feelings, the human experience of feeling. Observe mind, the human experience of the arising of mind states. So again, repeat this phrase is repeated for all of the foundations. This, to me, also points to, so not only that it is just a very natural human experience having a body, but also something about connecting to the actual experience of body. Below the level of concepts, ideas, agendas, opinions about this body, and contacting the actual experience of body. The sensation level experience of body, perhaps, in this moment. To me, this encourages a non-interfering awareness. And so abides contemplating the body as a body, begins to bring in this perspective that the Buddha points to, a perspective of wisdom. And the whole purpose of this perspective is to create the conditions. Gil was pointing to the, what conditions are we creating here? What are the conditions of our practice and what supports us to move towards freedom? So the Buddha is, in this definition, pointing to the conditions that will help us to wake up. So this condition, the conditions of exploring the body as a body, pointing to this experiential, direct contact with this human experience right now, right here. It begins to point to a non-reactive, non-judgmental, non-interfering kind of connection with experience. The body experience is like this right now. What is your experience right now? Abide. Resting. Abide. Contemplating the body as a body. This human body. The next word is diligent, sometimes translated as ardent. I like both of these terms. They bring in an energetic quality to the practice. Diligence, ardency, alertness, sometimes engaged, wholehearted. The word ardent has a kind of a heart connection to it. The word itself in the English translation, ardent, has a quality of heart connection, heartfelt interest, connection to what is this body as a body. And so this brings in, again, a kind of some contrasts in the words, ardent and abiding, diligent and abiding, holding those two together, those two words, holding them together. They don't have to be opposites or contrasts. There's a way in which we can be very relaxed, receptive, and very curious, very engaged. And this is, sometimes we can think of this almost as the art of our practice, how we balance these two, how we engage in these two qualities together. To me, this speaks to the word diligence. We could use the word persistence, And persistence in our practice here is not about a tight grip, a holding on to, a pushing through. And so this quality of energy and effort in our practice, because it's balanced with relaxation, it points to a very light persistence of effort. A light touch over and over and over again. In this moment, can you feel your breath? Or if the breath isn't so clear, can you feel the sensations of your hands? Or contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench? How hard is that? Feeling a breath. Just this part of this breath, an in-breath. And now an out-breath. When we explore the possibility of connecting to just a moment of experience, just this moment of experience, without thinking about, oh, I'm going to be doing this for the next 45 minutes. Oh, I have to gear up so that I can be present for the whole 45 minutes. That adds a kind of a weight and heaviness. All that we can really be present for is this moment. And it is so light. It is so simple, actually, to abide, contemplating a breath as a breath, this breath as a human breath, this in-breath, this out-breath. The trick to this persistence is to not pick up, oh, and I have to keep doing this for 45 more minutes, but just, oh, just this breath, just this in-breath, just this out-breath, light touch over and over and over again. The over and over and over again part, that's where our minds pick up the idea that it's going to be hard. But it's an idea, it's a concept that we're picking up, not the actuality, because we can't do more than one moment at a time. So this moment, and this moment. Abide, contemplating the in-breath as an in-breath, with gentle persistence, moment after moment, remembering the abiding part for me helps in that gentleness. Remembering that resting quality. The next phrase or word is clearly comprehending, sampajanya, sometimes translated as fully aware. One abides contemplating the body as a body. Diligent, clearly comprehending. In this context, this phrase, I believe, this word is used in different ways in different places in the suttas, and I believe that it's pointing to one particular way of exploring experience. Again, pointing to the perspective that the Buddha encourages us towards. There's one place in the suttas where this phrase, fully aware, is described as, paraphrased basically, experience is understood as it arises, as it persists, as it changes. So this is what it means to be fully aware of experience, that we are aware of the changing nature of experience. That we are clearly aware of experience as impermanent. And because of that, as unreliable, as a place where we can land and permanently find happiness. So this again is pointing to a perspective that the Buddha wants us to recognize our experience. So he's pointed to a couple different perspectives here. The perspective of our human experience, the body as a body, impersonal. And here, pointing to the impermanent nature of this bodily experience. As we start to investigate this body, we see it's comprised of vastly, rapidly changing sensations that don't last for very long. Again, this is not our usual perspective on the body. Our usual perspective, often with body in particular, is to see it through the lens of concept. We think about, we experience our hand through the idea of hand, perhaps. What hands do, how they do them, not consciously. But we rarely drop below the concept level of our experience. We often with our body, like I'll sometimes ask somebody to describe what they're experiencing, and they may say, well, I'm experiencing my shoulder right now. And shoulder is an idea. Shoulder isn't an experience. And so I may dive a little lower. Well, what is your experience in the shoulder? Is there aching or pressure or pulsing or vibration or tingling or pulling? So this begins to get to the actual direct experience. And as we touch into that direct experience, we see just how rapidly it's changing, just how little stability there is in the experience itself. The way our minds work often is that we see or relate to experience through concept, and concept essentially kind of creates a veneer or a sense of stability, because we are holding that idea in our mind, relating to our experience through our ideas about that concept, rather than through what's actually here in front of us. And so this, to me, is what clearly comprehending begins to point to. Again, this perspective of how we look at experience. This is talking about how we establish mindfulness. The commentaries for this word, clearly comprehending, point to understanding the purpose. For which we're doing something. And so why are we attending to our body as a body? And the overarching purpose the Buddha pointed to is to recognize suffering, understand how our own minds contribute to that suffering, to realize the possibility of freedom from that suffering, and to recognize that there's a path, a way towards that freedom. So freeing the heart from suffering is our purpose. Again, to me, this is a wisdom pointing in this word. It's pointing us to, why are we doing this? And how do we explore our experience to create the conditions that will allow the heart to release? Create the conditions for the freeing the heart from suffering and struggle, stress. Abide, contemplating the body as a body, contemplating this breath as a breath, diligent, relaxed, persistent, gently persistent, and fully aware. Mindful, the next word. I pointed to some of the words that this evokes: being with, being present, being aware, observing. As Gil pointed to yesterday, the words in the teaching, the Satipatthana Sutta in particular, the words associated with mindfulness, with this word sati, with the word mindful, evoke these qualities of abiding, cultivating, establishing. So they evoke this quality of being rather than doing. So mindful here may be the result of all of that's what's come before, as opposed to how we do it. The words in the sutta, the active side of our practice, the active side of the practice that creates the conditions to establish mindfulness, are things like observing, attending, attention, knowing, engaging with diligence. So this is the active side of the practice in the foundations of mindfulness. And this is, you know, as we read into each foundation, and we'll go through all the foundations over the course of these 2 weeks. Mostly, the instructions say something like, for instance, breathing in long, breathing in a long breath, one understands, I'm breathing in a long breath. Breathing out long, one understands, I'm breathing out a long breath. Or, in feeling, when feeling a pleasant feeling, one understands, I'm feeling a pleasant feeling. So that is the instruction. That's the practice. That's how mindfulness is established. That phrase, the instruction, doesn't use mindfulness in the instruction. It says, breathing in long, one understands, one knows, one observes, I'm breathing in long. That activity of observation, of understanding, creates the conditions for this quality of mindfulness to become established. That's my understanding of what this teaching is. We don't do mindfulness. It's established through these conditions of observing, recognizing experience, understanding what's happening, knowing what's happening while it's happening. The word sometimes translated as understanding can also be translated as knowing. When breathing in a long breath, one knows I'm breathing in a long breath. It can be that simple. How hard is it? You're breathing in. Know that you're breathing in. How simple. Again, pointing to this, connecting with the actual experience, a non-judgmental connection with experience. The last phrase in this sentence. Free from desires and discontent for the world. So this is the way it's translated sometimes is in this way. One abides contemplating the body as a body, diligent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, free from desires and discontent for the world. Makes it sound like that the practice of Satipatthana has to have freedom from desires and discontent in order to practice it. And yet there's many places, there's other places in the suttas where it is described that the practice of Satipatthana is the very thing that frees us from desires and discontent. So Bhikkhu Anālayo, in his exploration of this particular phrase, says in his understanding the Pali for this phrase could be also translated as something like freeing oneself from desires and discontent. So this had the active form of freeing rather than kind of the past tense, freed from, implying that this process of becoming free from desires and discontent happens, takes place while we are doing this practice. It's a simultaneous occurrence. And I think that resonates for me because certainly like in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, there's a whole section of that text that's devoted to looking at the hindrances. It's devoted to looking at essentially desires and discontent. It's devoted to looking at when we see anger arising in the mind, to know anger arising in the mind and to understand how it comes to be and how it falls apart. And so there we are actively encouraged to notice our discontents and desires as they come into being, as they fall apart. But again, from a different perspective than we usually apply to our desires and discontent. And so this points to a different way of attending to experience. I also wonder a little bit about the placement of these last two words. I explored the possibility a moment ago about mindful being the result of mindfulness is what is established by the practice of abiding, contemplating, body as a body, with diligence and clearly comprehending. Mindfulness is the result of that. Perhaps, too, becoming free of desires and discontent is a result of that practice also. This side is understood in some ways to point to the concentration nature, the concentration aspect of the practice. As the mindfulness becomes established, as there's a continuity of mindfulness in our experience, that is concentration. This is a form of concentration, as there's a continuity of mindfulness. And so I understand actually the establishment of mindfulness as the establishment of more moments of mindfulness. And so this form of concentration, in this case, it's not necessarily the concentration on one's experience, on staying with the breath, for instance. That's normally what we think of with concentration of a focus. We think of being with one thing and staying with it. And that is one way that concentration is explored in our practice. But this other way, there is another way that concentration is explored, and that is through this stability of mindfulness. Essentially, when our mindfulness is stable, from this perspective of understanding human experience that is impermanent, unreliable, there's much less being pulled out to be reactive about what's happening. So the continuity of mindfulness creates a stability of mind, a mind that is much less reactive. And these are qualities of concentration, quality of stability, quality of non-reactivity. That the mind is able to stay present moment after moment, not pulled off into thought. This is a form of concentration. And just to say that there are times when it is useful in exploring our experience to recognize that perhaps there's some desire, you know, maybe we're sitting here in the meditation hall and a thought about, I wonder what they're having for lunch, comes up. Might be useful to just see if we can set that aside. And so we can also explore the possibility of setting aside desires and discontent. I'm just like, yeah, not now. Don't need to engage with that thought now. I can be with the feelings of grumbling in my stomach and be with the sensation level of experience. And so there are times when we can choose to actively engage with this exploration of setting aside desires and discontent, and that can be very helpful. And we can also explore the possibility of recognizing another avenue to the freeing ourselves, how this practice frees us from desires and discontent is to recognize. So there's these grumblings in my stomach. There's the thought about lunch, and maybe along with that thought comes the wish, the desire, kind of the pull. Ooh, I'm ready for lunch. You know, when is it going to happen? So there's a wanting. So there's that desire, that pull in that direction of getting some food. Maybe thinking of going down and having an apple or something. So it could create some idea in the mind of something to do to take care of that desire. Another approach would be, rather than saying, oh, can I set aside the wanting and just feel the feeling? Sometimes we can do that. Sometimes we can set aside that sense of wanting. Sometimes it's not so possible. I wish it were possible when there was some reactivity arising in my mind to say, oh yeah, that's not so useful. I think I'll let that go. Sometimes that's possible, but more often than not, it's got a kind of a stickiness to it. And when it has that stickiness, it's really useful to then explore the possibility of being aware that that is a human experience that's happening in the present moment. This takes us essentially into the third foundation of mindfulness. So there's sensation in the body, the growling in the stomach, the gnawing feeling in the stomach, and the wanting. There's body sensation. This is the human experience of hunger. This is the human experience of gnawing. And this is the human experience of wanting, happening simultaneously. Can we know that? One abides contemplating, wanting as a human experience of wanting, abides contemplating its impermanent nature, its unreliable nature. And so this is another way in which this freeing from desires and discontent happens as we explore the practice. We don't have to somehow tell ourselves, oh, there's wanting. I'm supposed to be free from desires and discontent. Let me turn that off. It's more of an exploration. Can I open to that? Can I know that? Can I be with that? So one abides contemplating the body as a body, feelings as feelings, mind states as mind states, experience as experience. One abides contemplating experience as experience, gently persistent, fully aware and mindful, freeing oneself from desires and discontent for the world. This is right mindfulness. And this is the kind of mindfulness that creates the conditions for insight, for understanding. Gives our minds, essentially, one of the things I think about this practice is doing is giving our minds an education about dukkha, about suffering. Our habitual or pre-practice way, and even sometimes now, you're all experienced, and so have had quite a bit of practice exploring suffering, meeting it from this perspective. And yet, we often get caught again in our habitual perspective about suffering, not seeing it as suffering, but seeing it as something to fix or get rid of or change or our habitual perspective on suffering often is attributing the cause for our suffering to something outside of us. And there are conditions outside of us that do come into play in how we struggle. And yet the Buddha points to there's something most fundamental happening inside of our own hearts and minds that is the linchpin, the key, the thing that's creating and hooking the entire structure of struggle. And it's not inherently stuff that's going on outside of us that is creating our suffering. Thank goodness that's true. If that were the case, there'd be no possibility for freedom, no possibility for ease, for peace. But instead, the Buddha points to this functioning of our minds, this craving, this constriction that is locking suffering into place. And so what this practice of abiding, contemplating body as a body, diligent, fully aware, mindful, it's giving our minds an education about suffering. It's helping us to see that linchpin, that thing, what's going on in our own minds that's contributing to our suffering. Essentially, when we're suffering and not seeing it as suffering, we are kind of skipping over some fundamental aspect of our inner life. Not seeing a fundamental piece of what's going on inside. And as we begin to see our experience from this perspective the Buddha points to, we begin to understand in a very direct way how craving creates suffering in our minds, how aversion creates suffering in our minds. And we begin to see that the craving and the aversion themselves are the, it's kind of like the glue that's holding it all together. And that those are optional. Our organism, this human being, wants to move towards well-being, towards happiness, wants to have ease and peace, and yet fundamentally misunderstands how that's possible. It is through not seeing, through not recognizing experience in this way the Buddha points to, that we miss, that this misunderstanding happens. We think that changing the world is how we'll become happy, fixing something out there, or changing some part of, well, I shouldn't be so such and such, so I'll try to make myself this way instead. As we begin to explore our experience from this perspective the Buddha points to, our minds get a different kind of education, a deeper kind of education. And with that, our organism, which wants to move towards well-being, begins to see that some of the ways we've been engaging in the world were not very helpful, not conducive towards moving towards well-being. And it begins to reorient and shift us in a new direction. This is how this practice supports the conditions, at least part of my understanding of how this practice supports the conditions for freedom. So let's just sit for a moment.